It is.
Well, you kind of look like Billy Idol in this picture. Oh, can I see that?
I was trying to channel him.
Yeah, I think you did a good job. Oh, wow. That's cool.
So you should give us a very brief potted history of Zia. And I'll interrupt you and we'll go off at tangents because that's always the more interesting stuff. But you'll just trigger me, okay?
Okay.
So don't worry about having to be articulate or anything.
Let's see. Well, Zia started off in 1991. And our first show was actually 1992. Because I was trying to gather up some band members to play these very odd instruments. It was hard to find people to play these MIDI triggers with sticks.
Okay, so the first thing you're stating is that there are odd instruments.
Yes.
So we need to know what the odd instruments are.
Well, my idea was to perform the music using no standard instruments at all. No keyboards, no guitars, no regular drums. Just completely new and different instruments. One of the reasons is because the music's microtonal. I use different tunings other than just 12 notes per octave. And to play that on a keyboard is kind of difficult to keep track of where you are. So by putting the notes on these different MIDI triggers and then just hitting them with sticks, I could just simply teach people patterns that they memorize for each song.
And it would always stay in the microtonal range.
Yeah. So...
So you pre-programmed the microtonal side of it originally.
Mm-hmm.
And then more or less wherever anybody hit, it would stay within the parameters of the music.
Yeah, the musicians just need to know which pads to hit when, just memorize patterns. And it's all programmed ahead of time. So I was trying to find drummers to audition to do this, and drummers had a hard time. And guitar players didn't really use sticks, and neither did keyboard players, so I was having a hard time finding anyone. Vibraphone players usually wouldn't be into the style. And back then it was more hardcore industrial. I was screaming and la 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 and whatnot. So finally the two people that were in the other band I was in helped me with Zia. So the original lineup was me and Lisa Sirois and Noel McKenna. We were also in DDT, another hardcore band, industrial band.
And this is in Boston?
Yeah, that was in Boston.
So where were you trained? How do you even know what microtonal is?
Well, I had classical piano all my life, and then I went to Berkeley for music synthesis. And it wasn't until my last year at Berkeley that one of my professors introduced microtonal music to me. And I'd always thought about it. I always wondered why people don't use good notes in between, but I never really knew how to go about it.
Or more accurately, why do people in the West not use the notes in between?
Yeah, exactly. In fact, at Berkeley, they call Western 12-tone jazz harmony, they simply call it harmony class. And that started bothering me. So since 91, I heard my teacher come in and perform this microtonal song. And he actually sung the song and played a tape in front of the class. And it made my hair stand on end. And ever since then, I never wrote a 12-tone piece until recently.
Okay.
So
that brings us up to here. So what can you imagine, can you explain to somebody who's reading this what your interpretation at this point is of microtonal, not the traditional academic one, but your vision of what microtonal is and why that's your bridge with music to create something?
Well, I think people over the years, over the centuries, especially, you know, in Western music, people have experimented with different rhythms and different sounds. You know, now electronic music people experiment with all kinds of different sounds and timbres and different styles of music. And really the only thing left is pitch. People haven't been experimenting with different pitches. It's just one of the three parameters of music. It's like another dimension no one's dived into. And people in other countries have been using microtones. And so I feel like I want to explore that whole area. And sooner or later, someone might look at it and analyze it and figure out a theory that they can teach for these different tunings.
So you actually are interested in changing the face of music, right? Because one thing that I've always been, that draws me to different kinds of music is, we were talking before about punk, for example, and once I was asked what was the difference between punk and industrial, because I was formulating the idea of industrial music while I was auditioning Billy Idol, for example. So I'm yawning at the actual structure, the archetype of rock and roll. And I said, I guess that in punk, despite all the posturing, and this isn't a negative because I still thought a lot of it was fabulous and the energy was amazing and so on, so I'm not trying to put it down, but punk was trying to change the face of rock and roll. Specifically, I think. Whereas industrial music was trying to change the face of all music in the West, because as you point out, the rest of the world knew this already, that it was actually an open ball game, that anything and everything available, as John Cage. So
I feel like
everything in the world was available now, and everything in the world is ultimately music in some way. So
I feel like the 12-tone tuning is arbitrary as feet and inches or ounces and pounds.
So you're on the side of smashing the brick wall even more, crumbling it to dust.
Yeah, because it's art. Like, feet and inches I wouldn't really protest against, because it's just a measurement. And even though it's kind of silly, it's just a measurement. But art, you have to smash down all the walls for art and music.
Which is where I move across to both of you. Sitting here quiet. Because it seems that both of you have become involved in Zia. You've been, obviously you get attracted to something, to get involved in a creative project. You know, both of you must realize it takes a lot of your life, of your time, your energy, your thought, start to dream it, think it, live it, eat it, it's just with you all the time. So you've both committed yourselves to this project, Zia. Can you both explain how you got drawn to work in this project?
Mainly because I was interested in instrumentation, not using the normal instrumentation, and it's all electronic, and also I was a synth student at that time, so, and all the idea of a microtonal music, because I'm very interested in experimental music as well, so not using the same thing, and look for something different, I think that was my main idea.
Well, I didn't have an outlet for any synthesis work I had done up to that point. So
are you also classically trained?
Or? Yeah.
All of us.
All of us.
All piano players.
All piano players.
Yeah.
Isn't the piano a fantastic instrument?
Oh yeah.
I just got it today.
That's my next purchase when I move. This is, don't bother putting this in, but when I move, I've decided I'm going to give myself a really good piano. Because it's one of the ultimate instruments.
You've been playing all day.
Oh, you have? All right. So carry on. So, okay. I just wanted to check, you know, to make sure I know about it. So you're also classically trained.
And all of my playing in public until this point has been with the piano and vocals and weird instrumentations, but it was not electronic at all, and that was my other interest. So this provided a good outlet to physically be able to play out, not in school, but in clubs, and to learn how the business works on that end of the spectrum. And that just seemed like the perfect combination.
See, to me, I see in Liz and Haeyoung, I see me when I joined DDT, because I was straight out of college and I didn't really know how to go about being in a band. I had been in bands in the 80s, but it was in New Mexico. It wasn't anything that really went anywhere. So, and I didn't have any experience with booking shows and really getting the whole band, even just the band gear set up, really happening. So joining DDT taught me everything I know that I needed.
So here's one of the things that I think is a critical issue, because given that we're doing this interview in a sense, because what Zia is doing now potentially is as radical and innovative as what Throbbing Gristle was doing in 1975. There are cycles that happen when one thing is built until it becomes a formula, which was not my intention, for example, but industrial music, then someone else has to come along and break that down. That's the way it's supposed to be. You know, new generations are supposed to destroy the previous generation. If they don't,
let that get recorded.
So, using my own personal previous experience with TG, people used to say, what are your inspirations? And again, here's a difference between industrial punk. And rockers would go, oh, I liked the Velvet Underground and Iggy Pop. So did I, but that would be their main reference, you know, or the New York Dolls, those three, the triumvirate. And I would say John Cage, not his music, you know what, his books, and Stockhausen, and Nijeti, and Takemets. Japan, who's an amazingly underrated composer. And they would say, what do you mean? And I'd say, I see no reason why the structures and the concepts and the ideas of new post-electronic classical music cannot be applied to popular culture. Mm-hmm. And that would be the reason to have a band, because it's an experimental, almost an experimental entity that you can inject like a virus into the bloodstream of the culture and see what happens. So one thing that fascinates me with Zia is that it's confronting, if you like, the last bastion of westernization and western colonization of music. Kind of Judeo-Christian, mechanistic, let's build printing presses, let's build weaving machines, let's make industry, let's be able to do everything over and over again, build cars. That's all built on repetitious formula and the expectation that you will get the same thing again if you like it. The previous sweater you bought will look just like this one because we have, you know, we have the ability with a factory to make the same thing twice. The music is very much the same. That's why we called it industrial. One of the reasons was to make that point, that the whole way that the West deals with music is that it's repeatable. So if someone's successful, we go, oh yes, we can do that again. If she loves you, we can do that again. I want to hold your hand. Or if it's Iggy Pop, you know,
you
I want to be your...
The word?
Yeah.
Who?
Me.
You coined the word industrial?
Absolutely.
Oh, well,
on September
here you
the,
are.
September 3rd, 1975, London Fields Park, in the morning, walking between 50 Beck Road and 10 Martello Street with my dog Tanith, talking to Monty Cazaza. And I was saying to him, I don't know what to call this music that we're doing. And I said, should we call it Factory Records? And he goes, he said, why? Is it because of Warhol? He goes, no, it's too obvious. I'm like, yeah, you're right, it's too obvious.
Oh, my goodness.
And I said, well, what about industrial? And he goes, well, listen to yourself, Jen. What have you been saying to me all the way across the park? You've been going, you've been referring to the industrial this, the industrial that. Of course it should be industrial. That's the word you keep saying when you're explaining it to me. You're right. Industrial, you're right. Let's call it industrial records and industrial music. And he said, and the slogan is, industrial music for industrial people.
Yes.
And that's how it happened. And interestingly, most of the world can't believe this is possible, but before that day, it didn't exist.
Oh, I believe it, because no one can figure out. People argue who coined the term and where, what it really meant.
Well, that's when it happened.
Where it came from.
That's what happened.
It's amazing.
That simple, but that's a digression you don't need to bother with. The point is that we're now...
That's great, because see how much Genesis influenced me already? He hired Billy Idol. He coined the word industrial, which is...
It's really interesting.
That's
now the way it came from.
Well, it's funny, because people... don't realize. I've thought about this recently just because it's odd. It's a really odd feeling to know that there's a specific hour of a day that before that moment a genre didn't exist.
You have to put in what hour.
And it's how unusual in the terms of culture and music that should be so specific. Same with punk rock though. I mean, you know, Malcolm McLaren in the same year did the same thing. Although the word punk was already around, so there was a kind of a grey area. But he was the one who pinned it down and kind of stamped on it.
Yeah.
Put his footmark in it. And that was exactly the same time, which is why the Billy Idol thing came in before we were. And Mark Perry, this is, again, you don't need to use this, but as an aside for you, just curiosity value. Mark Perry started Sniffing Glue, the first Xerox fanzine, at the same time. And he printed this page in his fanzine in the first issue, learn three chords, form a band.
Yeah.
Right. Then in the next issue he interviewed me and I said, why learn three chords?
Form a band.
Yeah, why learn any chords? Which is what you're saying in a sense, you know, like why learn Western music, you know?
Yeah, exactly.
Exactly, you know, so you want to do rhythm and blues, I'm not interested.
The reason that industrial music...
So that really is the nexus, that's the matrix of industrial music. Why learn three chords? You know, that's it. And of course, one of the first premises of TG was no drummer. That's rock and roll. And men always play lead guitar, which was true then. It's always guys playing the lead. So let Cozy play the guitar because she's a girl. She goes, I can't play. That's even better. Here's the lead guitar. She goes, oh, it's too heavy. So we just got an electric saw, a jigsaw. We just chopped all the sides off it so it was lighter. And she ended up with what became a stick guitar. Before they had...
Into the stick guitar.
Huh?
Look how much we're learning today.
It was
wow.
And we bought...
The end of the stick guitar?
No, it's the beginning.
He invented the stick guitar.
You invented the stick guitar?
By accident.
How?
Before the Chapman stick... Well, because Cozy couldn't play guitar, so I said, that's why you should play lead. Then she picked up... We bought this $30 guitar in Woolworths, a satellite. It was the cheapest one we could find, because I hate the guitar. So I wanted to get the worst I could get, so it would always stay out of tune. It's too heavy. So I just went across the studio, the loft space as you'd call it, got my electric saw and just sliced both the sides off it and gave it back to her and said, how's that? And she ended up with this stick guitar.
But it's just the playing mechanism is different.
Oh, well then we changed the pickups and everything too, but she always, well she didn't know anything about tuning it, so she used to use a slide, like a metal slide, a bottleneck. But it's just an aside. Silly stuff like that.
Oh my God.
And it's just that simple. Someone went, it's too heavy. Okay. How's that? Isn't it funny? And of course it was true. Who needs the extra wood?
Did you use a rotary saw or like a saber saw?
Saber saw.
Gotta know the details.
Yeah. Anyway, you don't need all this stuff because we talked about it. We're having a conversation. I always think the best interviews are conversations because things come out you don't expect. But you can leave me out. I don't want to dominate this conversation. You've got to get rid of me.
Oh, yeah. See, I'm listening.
But this is just us chatting. So what I'm really pointing out, this is where you come back in. You edit me out there, right?
Yeah.
And we come back. We go, so we're at the same spot I have this feeling there are hot spots in culture. This is the question, in a sense, okay? Where something becomes inevitable, a really major shift in the way something is done. And I think that happened with TG, and that happened with Elvis, and that happened with the Beatles, although they were less conscious of what was happening. Mm-hmm. That was just opportunism and intelligent use of opportunism with the Beatles, I think. But there are moments in time, in popular culture, whether it be with art, music, writing, where a shift is inevitable. And all the previous rules get thrown out of the window once and for all. Okay? There's two things that I think make Zia very, potentially very important, and potentially able to do this. One of them is the fact that you're not using, you've even abandoned the game of the destruction of the traditional instruments, which is, if you like, the source of industrial music, was mm-hmm. destroy rock and roll by destroying its instruments and include electronics and the classical electronic experimental concept of music. Now we're at a point where you're saying forget all instruments and forget Western tone scales and all this control system, which is probably very patriarchal anyway because it comes from the church. Mm-hmm. Playing chant and cathedrals and so on, as we know. So, the first part of the question is, do you believe that Zia is one of these points of intersection where inevitably, whether it's you or someone else, there's another major change happening in music? That's question one for all of you. And you're supposed to say yes and give reasons. Everybody should think what they're doing is the most important thing in the world. And part two is, and please don't misunderstand this question, but I think it's significant that it's three female virtuosos that are choosing to do this. Absolutely.
And that's a coincidence. I wasn't looking for females, believe you me.
Well, you see, I would argue that that's the inevitability of the change. That there's been a huge shift since the 70s in terms of acceptance of women of all types and in all genres of music. But there hasn't been the spawning and the beginning of a new, absolutely new direction in music, as of yet. By women. So potentially you have that arena as well.
But my
first question was, so question one is, are you the intersection where the next inevitable big shift will happen?
I hope so. But my fear is that people don't notice that we're that different because I write pop music. We play pop music now, and yes, we were very hardcore industrial in the beginning, but even then, other people were doing that. And since I'm somehow able to write pop music with 10 notes per octave, I think the only thing people notice that's extremely different is the instruments. So I'm not sure how much of a huge change I'm going to make in breaking down the barriers of tonal music when people might not even realize that I'm doing that.
Okay, we'll come back to that. What about you?
Well, the biggest thing that people end up noticing is the fact that we are not playing quote-unquote normal instruments. We're hitting things. We're hitting things with sticks, but we're not drummers. And we're triggering things, and everything has a technical reason behind it. But it's not a guitar, not drums, not bass, not anything conventional. And that is what seems to stick in people's mind, other than the beats that drive them to dance.
Well, I like the idea of playing just normal music instead of just all wacky experimental music. that kind of builds a bridge. There's all groups of people who play experimental, like total different side, and it can't really blend with other people who listen to pop music and regular music. And I think we build a bridge in between, and using technology as well. So maybe it's conventional that way.
That's what I've been trying to do. I'm not sure how conscious it is or unconscious. I'm not really even sure anymore. But
you know, people get interested in your music, and then they also get interested in the instruments. So that's the attraction, I think.
So you can educate through the culture. You can lead people across that bridge, mm-hmm. so that the unfamiliar can, with hindsight or retroactively, inform them so they understand more of the technical side later. Do you think that might happen?
I think through interviews it helps people to learn. And maybe on a CD putting a little note, this is microtonal, then people gradually realize what we're doing.
What I find interesting is that we're kind of... In the club scene, we're considered that prototype style of band where they don't know where to stick us with other people. So we've played with reggae bands, we've played with death rock, we've played with hardcore, we've played with punk, we've played with stoner people, and every possible style you can think of, we've played on the same bill. Because they do not know where to stick us, because in Boston, there was a severe lacking of electronic bands. And they didn't want to stick us with DJs because it wasn't considered the same thing, even though it was all electronic. Mm-hmm. So we ended up getting put on the bill with some of the most interesting combinations of styles of music. It's like we were that show where nobody knew where to put anybody, so we all got stuck on the same bill.
But it works.
It totally works
if we're with happy bands.
Yeah, plus it's so much more wonderful to play with bands that are friendly rather than people trying to be cool.
We played our share of goth shows.
I think all other bands who have samplers or some kind of electronic controller, we play with. It doesn't matter what kind of music they are. Mm-hmm. Whenever they have some weird things going on, other than guitar and regular bass, drum, you know.
Or it's an all-girl show.
Yeah, or
five different styles.
Chick bands.
Yeah. Something like that.
How do you feel about that?
About what?
The gender issue, or the gender, the joker card, if you like, of gender. Do you think it?
Oh, the gender or genre? Gender.
At this point, gender.
Oh, I don't know. It's just silly.
I think it's advantage in a sense. Because people get interested, it's all girls, but we are all into
It's like
technology.
Reverse sexism. It's like, you know it's sexism, but it's to your advantage. Mm-hmm. And I always say, this is the greatest time for women, because...
That's the universe cheering.
Because we get free... we get free donuts. I think men open the door for us.
Okay, let's switch it up for a few donuts.
Yeah, we can still
have any job we want.
Fine.
Oh, yes.
The only time that the gender issue... basically backfired was when we played this band at this club called Machine, which was underneath this club called the Ramrod in Boston. And a lot of our fan base refused to go to that show because it was underneath a gay bar.
I was going
to
say Ramrod.
It was more of a sexual orientation issue than a gender issue, though.
But I'm just saying, that's where the gender thing backfired, where women did not bring people to the show because of where we were playing, rather than who we were.
Yeah.
That was
basically a lot of our straight gay...
Straight gays is great. I would go along with straight gay. I met straight gay.
Straight up gay.
Yeah.
A lot of our straight guy friends didn't go to that show because they were chicken.
Oh, really?
It was really
disappointing. They didn't want to be classed as homosexual by having been in the same building.
It was really eye-opening.
Now that's sad.
Pathetic.
Because the fact is, that was a really great show. I mean, there was this bartender who was a postman by day and a transvestite bartender by night. And Elaine and I were in the bathroom getting ready. And Elaine goes,
please, do you have any black eyeshadow?
And I said, no. And this male voice goes, well, I do. And suddenly this black eyeshadow goes flying through the stalls, and we're like, cool. And so I'm doing my hair, and the bartender comes out of the stall and goes, hey, you need some sparkles in your hair. I was like, okay. You need some coils, and you need this like, and that and the other.
You need some sparkles in your hair.
Well, you know, the point is, ooh.
What is you just messed up the cool, but never mind.
The point is,
yeah.
It was a great show because the people were very responsive to what we were trying to do that night, and whoever showed up ended up enjoying themselves immensely, despite, you know, where we were playing.
I think we should play for gay audiences more. I think we
should
go over.
They're more open.
Because we're kind of like Madonna. I don't know.
I think gay guys would like that.
No, we're not like Madonna, but you know what I mean. We're sexy and happy and crazy.
See, I just don't like to put us in certain category and walk in a band, or whether we are happy or some aggressive band. I just want people to take us the way we are instead of just putting us in some kind of categories.
So do you think that do you think that's becoming more possible now in the 90s? Or well, actually, the,
I think
sorry,
it's in
excuse
York.
Me, the in New York. Mm-hmm. You think it's a New York thing?
I think it's easier.
Can not be categorized?
Yeah, in Boston, like everybody was categorized, and they have.
I don't know why bands insist on being so categorized and so the same all the time. Because a band is like an entity; it's like a whole personality within itself, mm-hmm. and all of us have more than one personality.
Right.
I mean, you know, look at me on stage, and then here I introduce space meetings in really conservative outfits. And
I just actually read I was reading a book about the way that the brain works, and interestingly, it was discussing the brain, and then it was talking about artists, in inverted commas, or creative human beings, and it actually said that artists think and live differently. That they maintain multiple personalities.
I agree with that.
And that this is usually frowned upon as some kind of a sickness by the status quo. The way that society works and the 9-to-5 existence. And that many people who would like to become creative or think they would be a writer of fiction or a painter are actually discouraged because of their confusion and guilt at this conversation that happens inside their head between more than one being. Mm. That one's going, I would like to do this because my vision tells me the world is like this and it should sound like that. And the other one goes, well, what if I did it this way? And another one goes, well, yes, who cares? Just do it. And I'm sure that you've all had that conversation inside your head, you know, where you almost can almost have a dialogue constantly happening between the creative being and the left brain practical one that says, well, you what about the rent or whatever it might be, to make it simple.
Or you just have a steady stream of random music going through your head that you can never shut off.
Absolutely.
I mean, not to sound ridiculous or anything, but it's just like, I don't know how many times I've heard this, including myself and everyone that I run into in music, that there's this constant stream of melody or harmony going through your head, and you can't get it out unless you put it into some tangible format. And then it's immediately replaced by something else. Like, you go to sleep and you still hear it, and you wake up, you still hear it, you dream it, you live it, you breathe it, and it's always there. Even when you're sitting in some boring meeting, or maybe you have to talk to your parents, they're talking to you about anything that they want to either give you advice on or scold you, and you still have melody going on in your head. You're going, wow, I want to write that down. And it's like, you can't get rid of it.
I know exactly what you mean. I woke up with one of those this morning. I went to sleep with it, woke up with it. So there's a question triggered by you, which is it just right brain activity? Is being creative, is being an artist, in your case is at least musicians, probably more, because I think being an artist is being an artist. The medium isn't that important, it's just which one we use as a bridge, as you said. So are creative artists and musicians, in a sense, instead of saying, oh, here's the modern man who's in touch with his female side, or here's the modern woman who's in touch with her power side, is the artist musician in touch with their right brain on a constant level? Is it biological? Is it neurological? The way that creativity happens.
I always get those two.
Get my brain hemispheres mixed up. Which is which now?
Yeah. Left is the one that organizes. It's the so-called rational side.
Okay.
And it's usually controlled by your right hand. So your right hand, your ability to add up and spell and make boring sentences is supposedly left.
See, I'm all screwed up because I'm both.
Okay, Liz is my secretary because I am completely unorganized.
I'm ambidextrous.
Ambidextrous, yeah. Okay.
But she's both organized and creative.
So she,
it's all screwed up.
No, it's not screwed up. So you have left, right, brain. You see, I have a theory I want to posit in a second because you're an example of what I think is happening. It's one of my little theories, but... And again, you don't need to put this in, but this is just... there's a book called The Origin of Consciousness in the Breakdown of the Bicameral Mind. Boring title. The basic theory of the book is that up until about 3,000 years ago, human beings had no awareness of being separate individuals. They lived absolutely in a present. They didn't know they'd been born, and they didn't know they were going to die. They knew that death happened, but they didn't feel separate. Their right brain was completely in charge, and they could hear voices. They heard divine.
Up until how long ago?
Only 3,000 years. Not long at all. And that 3,000 years ago, various catastrophes happened that meant that different isolated groups of beings met each other, and the right brain that was preeminent and predominant started to become overwhelmed by left brain needs to survive. So the left brain kicked in for survival reasons and eventually triumphed over the right brain, and in doing that generated the idea of a future and forecasting, which is where consciousness first began. And before that, the idea of consciousness and predicting and remembering and so on was completely different. What I think has been happening during the last century, since just after the last World War, when LSD happened and the atom bomb happened, is that we learned to split the very essence of everything, material and consciousness, literally, both of them at the same time, or between 45 and 50. And that this is the beginning of an entirely new consciousness, and they say it takes 1,000 years for a new consciousness to happen, and that the next one will be something that you're experiencing, and probably both of you too. And I think that technology is the X factor, the new factor that's made this possible. So you have LSD and the atom being split, triggering the first potential of a new consciousness. Then you have technology coming along to amplify that possibility, so that instead of it being the right brain at the beginning dominating the left, and then later the left dominating the right, we now have the right and the left, if you like, making friends finally.
Well, for instance, mathematicians and scientists are many times they're musicians. My mom's a mathematician and a musician, and my dad's a mathematician, he's a music critic. But anyway, a lot of their mathematician friends are musicians, like an overwhelming amount of them. And a lot of, we're in the music technology field. We went to Berkeley for music technology, and I'm going to NYU for music technology, so we've met lots and lots of people that are into technical field and also musicians. And
So there's a question.
Goes together very well. I don't.
Do you think that A, it's possible at least that a new consciousness is beginning to happen, a literal evolutionary change in the species? Question one. Question two, would that make what Zia is doing, both intuitively and literally, significant as one of the first manifestations of this change into what I call the third mind, where the right brain and the left brain are friendly and by collaboration, for example, generate something above and beyond any individual, which I think the web is a metaphor for anyways.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think...
Did you follow me on that one?
Sort of.
But in the well, A, is there a new consciousness happening? Maybe. B, if it is, would you feel that you were part of, even unwittingly, part of that expression? Because what you were describing to me is an example of what I speculate is happening.
Your answer to that.
Well, as far as the whole left brain, right brain, getting along and getting together and being happy, I've met several people like that. I mean, granted, we're not in the majority, but I never honestly put too much thought into thinking that it was any different from anything else. It just meant that if one hand got tired, the other one would take over. Or if you were at a loss for organization, then you give up and just become creative, you know what I mean? It's just one of those things you don't really think about. You just end up doing it. So you don't really consider it any different than what anyone else would do because you really don't analyze what the other people are doing.
You understand how radical that statement is?
Yeah.
That in the 50s, people would have their left hand taped
behind the back,
so they didn't use it. So what you just said, 50 years ago, which in terms of the evolution of the species is nothing, would be heresy. But to you, it's a comfortable normality. This is significant. Think about it.
Okay.
Interesting.
Yeah. Can this stuff say something about it?
Well, you've been listening, so do you think it's possible that the human brain, the human species, for example, could evolve further in terms of consciousness, that it might be happening?
Well, I didn't even take it that far. I think that human being has different needs. So one is very emotional side, very personal side, and there's all this industrial and just want to develop and go for a bigger side. So I guess if people are looking for, like going back, because you know how much the technology has advanced. But at the same time, people are still looking for the basic, the human side of it. I think that's what it is. There's not much of one left brain or right brain.
You might get surprised.
Perhaps.
Do you think it's possible to be involved in a massive change in consciousness and not even need to know?
That's quite possible, mm-hmm.
You bet.
I missed everything.
No, you didn't.
I don't know if I'm going to say what they already said.
Well, you don't have to. That's the nature of collaboration.
So...
Well, first of all, we're talking about...
See, to me...
Is consciousness changing? Perhaps is consciousness changing?
That's such a hard question because I'm not sure what other people's consciousnesses are. And to me, I think of one side of your brain as your technical, organizational, mathematical side, and the other side is your creative, crazy side. And
you said something interesting. You said that your mother is both.
Mm-hmm.
Sort of. And your father is critical.
My dad's not a musician, but...
So he's kind of on the side, leaning towards left. And this is not a criticism in any way, okay? But you're quite comfortable with integrating both, going back and forth as it suits you for survival, for practicality, for creativity, for whatever it is you need to achieve. You can comfortably just go back and forth.
To me it seems so normal, but I'm not sure if I know if it's a new consciousness or how far away it is from other people's way of thinking. It's hard for me to tell from my point of view, because to me it seems like everyone is just like this. I don't know. And plus, we're around so many people that have a very thick connection, and I think it's literally a thicker connection.
Honestly, I think we are sheltered from what is considered the rest of society because we've been formulated and bred in a very creative environment for so long that we have no idea what our... We like what we do. How many people can say they like what they do in the rest of the world? We don't know.
But it's not like the movement that we want to make. It's natural for us.
Right.
Yeah. It's not like we have some consciousness of changing the society or making new music. It just comes naturally and it meets the need for people.
But that's sometimes how the best things happen, you see.
I think another example is, as you know, I'm like very much into space exploration. And I think I've always thought that way, but it wasn't really until I got out of college, say like 1991, where I really started pushing that. And I started out by joining all these email lists and having discussions with people. And a few years later, I joined a local active space, pro-space chapter and started doing all this pro-space stuff. And I never thought of it as a movement. I just thought it was the obvious thing to do and something I had to do and that completely made sense. And I didn't think of it as radical. I eventually started writing pro-space music to go along with this, kind of to bridge my two lives together, my music life and my pro-space life. And it made sense to attach something to the music so that you're not just a musician, just for the sake of entertaining people. And then recently I've been hearing leaders of different pro-space societies talk about the music that we need for the movement. And it's just dawning on me now that, oh, I think I am involved in a movement, a pro-space movement. And I'm writing the art that's going to help make this movement a real, like a reality. Like any movement always has music and art that goes along with it. And it's not always a conscious decision of the artist. It's just a natural step.
Isn't it fabulous that you're so comfortable with being members of a new species that you don't even have to think about it?
That's wonderful. Let's cheer to that.
Never thought about it.
Yeah. I have to point out that Hae-young is drinking out of a very large measuring
cup. Exactly one cup.
Well, yeah. This is the kind of question that sometimes is revealing in an easy way to people. Now this would be hard for Zia because you play microtonal, okay? But
we do play some 12-tone music.
Okay.
We play classical music even.
You do?
Yep.
I am going to ask each of you, in a perfect world where budgets and practicalities and everything else didn't matter, and you were offered $1 million, which piece of music by somebody else would you do a cover version of?
Oops.
You can go.
Oh, I know.
Something I wouldn't have even said a couple. No, I'm not going to say Flesh for Fantasy.
You're not going to say that? Oh, should I?
I don't know. For $1 million, I could do Quest for Ivan Well.
Okay. You always want to do that one.
Okay. Quest for Fantasy. No. What I was really going to say is Morton Subotnick's Silver Apple.
Really? I thought you were going to say Billy Idol.
Yeah, but that's the obvious answer. I can't think
Silver
Apple. Obvious.
On the moon. That's a fantastic, fantastic piece of
music. If we could somehow, I don't know, make it into a...
There you go.
Club song.
I never thought of that thinking.
Never thought of that.
Think.
It's hard. It's not something, I don't want to just say something that I don't
okay,
need.
Okay, well, we
And you get to do something you like?
Yeah. It's got to be something you like.
Cause you're coming
from the future back to the past, literally to a previous century, probably. So from the previous century, what would you do? What would you bring into the future?
Oh yeah, we're in a new century. Sorry. It's still sinking in.
It is for me too.
It's not yet. Let's see.
Technically it's begun.
Sympathy for the Devil.
Close enough.
Oh.
Sympathy.
That's what I'd cover.
That's good too.
Wow.
Fabulous.
Metal.
I'd like to
have some. That's not metal.
Metaling.
Exactly. Always comes back to me.
Well, you're there.
I know, but there's a question that I can't
take your phone. Take your left hand and touch your head, please.
Mm-hmm.
Come on. Guess what?
Can I say...
You're here.
I am here.
Therefore, you should answer. That's your job right now.
Right now? See, like right now, we play a lot of happy music, but myself is very like emotional, dark person, and I really love Massive Attack music. What's that one? Is that Angel? It's like, maybe like Dark Angel or something. I've been listening to like over and over all day today. I think that would really good Sia concert. Different side of Sia.
See, I think I need to let the other band members' dark side show through, because I'm such a dynamic optimist, whatever.
Or see, like, just my point of
general.
Right. I mean, I do like all pro-space and happy and you know technology and all that, but I think music is the outlet of the emotional. You know, you're. See, you have an emotional side. You're a human being. It's not, you have all this goal, or you have a hope and everything, but still you're just really human being. One of the downsides, this very little thing, and everybody feels the same way. It doesn't matter like what you are, who you are, how much you have accomplished. But that's something that I want to bring out.
When I was in my deepest, darkest, most depressed state I can remember since I was a teenager was when I left my husband.
Mm-hmm.
And look at the song I wrote.
It's happy.
Plastic Man and Big Bang. Big Bang's kind of like
dun, happy, though.
Yeah, but it's goopy.
But it's not happy though. It's not
but
a happy.
It's not dark and depressing and gloomy either. It's kind of silly.
But if you really
look at our
it,
video,
it's not happy though.
Yeah, but you really have to listen closely and think about it.
Argue me.
Try to get any
as much as you want,
sort of.
But it's not a happy tune.
I'm just saying that's how my darkness. I have to turn it into a joke, and then it goes away. You know.
Does it?
But it didn't go away.
Does it go away?
Well, no. But that's my way of dealing with it.
Why like making a joke out of it?
Oh, I didn't make a joke out of it at the time.
You're contradicting yourself, you know.
The way I wrote the lyrics and the melody.
I hate to say this to you, but let me be the bringer of bad news. You are contradicting yourself right, left, and center.
Okay, how can I make sense of
it? It's a happy tune, but it's not happy if you listen. I made a joke of it, but I don't really make a joke of things that make me unhappy.
Well,
what is this song?
Part of being an artist is contradicting yourself. When I wrote that song, I was so depressed. I had lost 10 pounds. I hadn't eaten. I hadn't even had any alcohol or anything in weeks. I'd just been like nothing. Just dehydrating, and I was turning into a sponge. And that's when I wrote that song.
So you don't mean joke, you mean catharsis, maybe? Without putting words
in your mouth? Well, now that we play the song and we do this video, it's this huge silly video. Like, it's so silly and funny and goofy. But when I wrote the song, I was not in that frame of mind at all. So I don't know, maybe someone else can help me out.
Music. No, I think it's time to, I think that it's very, I hope this is good therapy, because I think Leo's just starting to say, hey, what about the dark side, and come on, don't kid yourself, honey, that was a sad song.
I really like the Spider, because I think Spider was the song I wrote in that period, that was about my therapist.
Really? I love Spider. I think it really touches me, you know what I mean?
Yeah, that song, I feel disturbed just thinking about it, actually. Plastic Man somehow ended up sounding goofy, and maybe that was just because I produced the music when I was in a better frame of mind. Like, I actually made the sound and pieced it together.
By when you were over it.
Was a better frame of mind, but when I sat down to write the lyrics, it was just horrible.
Well, I think at this point, we're close to having to promote the CD, don't you? Seeing as you're talking about tracks on the CD. Mm-hmm. Are we?
Yep. Could be in like part of the year or something.